Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with the healthcare leaders making a measurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join me, Megan Antonelli, and my friend, Shahid Shah, for our weekly No BS deep dives into what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Welcome to Health Impact. I'm Janae Sharp. I'm the founder of the Sharp Index, and I'm here with Health Impact talking to amazing leaders and founders that we got to meet. And I would love if you could introduce yourself to our audience and talk a little bit about what you do. And today we're going to be talking about innovation in women's health, in digital health, in privacy. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to learn from you and to hear about your work.
I guess I'll start. My name is Urquita DeRowan. I'm a physician who is triple board certified in family medicine, lifestyle medicine, and diversity medicine. I have been working in the digital health space since before it was cool, before the pandemic, for about 7 years. I know that sounds like ancient and digital health years, but I've worked in various capacities in leadership. I serve as a healthcare consultant in digital health quality and compliance and regulatory things, all the fun things that nobody likes to talk about and have like laughs and drinks over, but the things that we need to keep at the top of mind. And I also serve as the chief medical officer of IMI.
Awesome. Nice.
And I'm Erin Peterson. I'm the CEO at IMI, and IMI is a company that provides a smart birth control solution. We have a case and an app that allows you to track your birth control and make sure you're taking it every day as you plan to.
All right. I like this. This is important, something to do. So I had a few questions just hearing about your background and hearing about and learning about your product. I want to know more about this case, like, and what it does. Like, you know, there are different cases, right? So what is the innovation? Like, what's the new thing that you decided, and how did you get there? How did you get to this decision?
Sure. Shall I take that one, Dr. DeRuin?
Yeah.
The IMI Smart Case is a case that was designed about 4 years ago by the original IMI team. It is beautiful. The design is beautiful. The fit and finish is beautiful. It was fabricated by a team of industrial designers and jewelry designers. And the reason that I emphasize that it's so beautiful is that I believe this is one of the reasons that it has been so effective. The IMI case itself is designed so that you can fit almost any form of birth control pill inside the case. It supports over 160 different brands, and it tracks when you've opened the case, taken out your pill, and it tracks it in an app. The app itself is also really beautiful. It tracks whether or not you've taken your pill. Then it allows you to track about 60 other health characteristics that you may want to track alongside your pill. How good your hair is, how good your skin is, like how good your sex life is. Like, are you in a good mood? Are you in a bad mood? Those are all really important for people who are taking the pill. And so altogether, we track all of those things within the app, which is associated with the case.
I like that. Dr. DeRowan, I know you have some background in innovation. How did that impact some of this design work that you did?
Well, actually, I came on a little later to the project.
Yeah.
In terms of that. So I wasn't involved in the design, but when I heard about the design, I was so excited because these are things that we definitely need to push forward in terms of medication adherence and kind of compliance, especially in this realm, because we all know that about, in terms of unplanned pregnancies, about 52% occur in women who aren't on any birth control at all. But there's about 43% that come when people are using their birth control inconsistently or incorrectly. So this is kind of taking that guesswork out and reminding women what's important to them and allowing them to kind of figure out what they want to do, how they want to manage their bodies, especially in these times where we're seeing all of the things that are coming out in the legislative system that aren't necessarily putting women first. And IMI wants to put women first.
Oh, I like that. A women first design. That's good. So maybe you didn't design it, but that's why you came. You're like, this is something I can get behind, something I can believe in. Let's talk a little bit about the business model. I want to talk about that focus, like the women first from a technology company. Like, what does that mean for you?
Sure. Dr. Girl, do you want to talk about it? Or?
Sure. Sure.
Both. I want to hear from both. I get to hear from both.
We'll be chatting about it, but I'll take a start at it. So in terms of women first, I think a lot of healthcare has been male-focused and male-dominated. Essentially, up until about the 90s, 2000s, when you thought about a physician, you thought of this male-dominant, authoritarian, paternalistic doctor. And now there are more women that are composing healthcare, but a lot of the healthcare policies and rules and regulations and all those things kind of are male-focused. We didn't even necessarily have women in clinical trials until the 90s. So we were always an afterthought. So now with Emmy, we want to put women first and we want to kind of have women kind of take in some of that autonomy and take in some of those things where they can have their own medical decision making. Because as we know, women are leading the healthcare world, not only professionally, but they are the patients. I know when I have men who come and see me when I was working clinically in person, I always say you're here for four reasons, one of four. You're either here because your wife or your mother or your girlfriend told you to come. Your school or your job told you you need a physical. You are thinking that you're having some kind of male problem where you think you have an STD or some erectile dysfunction. Or you are in a lot of pain and you think you're dying. Like, those are the four reasons that men go to the doctor. Women are the ones that take care of themselves and also their families. So we have to make sure that we're keeping them healthy.
Right. That's true. And women make a lot of the consumer purchases too for healthcare and for everything. So what does that mean from a technical perspective? I'd love to hear more. You have a background in technical development. What does that actually mean?
So from a technology perspective, I think one of the things that all women are aware of is that oftentimes you put a battery in something, you put Bluetooth on it, you paint it pink and you call it women's electronics. Like if you walk into the women's electronics section at Best Buy, it was like, oh my gosh, this all has Bluetooth. Half of it doesn't even have an app. So what's digital about it? And when the team was designing this solution for women, there was a few things they realized. One, women really want to take the birth control. Women are very busy. It is very hard to carry around your birth control with you. No woman wants to be stopped in the middle of their day or in the middle of a meeting, have somebody like a clumsy app say, hey, take your birth control so that everybody hears it, right? If you're going away on vacation, you want to carry your birth control with you. You want to put it on the bedside table, you know, at an upcoming holiday weekend away without worrying that your future in-laws are going to walk in and see your birth control sitting on a nightstand, right? I mean, you've got this beautiful case. You can carry it with you everywhere you go. It is reliable. It has a very long battery life, so you don't have to worry about charging it all the time, taking up precious charger room. And then when the app itself is ready to remind you, it's a very discreet reminder. It's also a beautiful app. The app experience is fantastic. It's friendly. It's warm. It's not patronizing. It's not condescending. It doesn't feel antiseptic. It's just a really warm, engaging, one-time, every single day experience. And I think that there was a set of really sound technology architecture decisions that informed the app and that informed the case and the design decisions, industrial design decisions. But I think really the breakthrough here was realizing that women's medical tools and services are going to be used as expected and as requested if they're beautiful and fit into women's lives.
I like that. We want beautiful things to use. There's something else I think we need to talk about more about how you've designed this. There are two things. One is about, you know, focusing not towards selling towards a health system. And the second thing I really want to talk more about is your privacy standards. Because in the digital health world, a lot of companies sell your data. A lot of companies don't have that focus. And you've had this focus where it matters and it's central to both how you designed it and how you've designed your business. And I think that's important. So I'd love to hear more about that journey.
Sure. Dr. Drew and I can take this one. The original founder and original founding team, Amanda French and team, believe strongly in user privacy. And when I had the opportunity to acquire Emmy earlier this year, my biggest driver, frankly, was the user privacy aspect. Emmy was the only major app that tracked periods and other women's reproductive health and it never sold its data. And so it was really important for me to make sure that as a product and as a community, this remained something that women could trust with their data. And the ability to provide an app where women can store their data, track their data. I mean, you're rolling over first thing in the morning. You're telling this app some of the most intimate details of your life before you even get out of bed. And that's not something that you want to share or broadcast. And one of the things we very quickly realized is that for a lot of women, the idea of having this app provided by their employer or their health system meant, for better or for worse, and sometimes accurately and sometimes not, that somebody else was going to see, somebody else was going to have access to this data. And what we quickly realized is that if we really want to be a partner in women's health, we have to be in a position to tell women that you can use this app, you can acquire this app, you can use this case, you can put your data in it, and you're going to own your data, and we're not going to share this. We're not going to share this with anyone. If you would like to share this data, you can take the app into your doctor, you can take the app wherever you want to go, but we're never going to sell your data. And that is really meaningful for our community.
Right. I think that's really important too, thinking like the patients have control over their data as well. What does that mean for you, Dr. Durow, and how does that fit into your longer term work with like equity and with digital transformation?
I think that is essential to all of those kinds of things because we have to put patients first. So for me, I'm definitely an equity advocate. I, as a digital health consultant, work in the realm of quality and regulations. And what we are trying or seeing a lot of times in digital health, we have not had a close eye on us until the pandemic. And now we're seeing that there are so many regulatory bodies coming up that are looking at certain things, like the FTC came out with their naughty list from the people who did sell their patient information. So we don't want to be on that list. We want right. to feel safe when they are coming and using an app that is so personal, that's so intimate. They're talking about their sex lives. They're talking about their period, things that people don't want to be talking about with the entire world. So for right. me, in my work, I think that it's essential to kind of use the approach I use, like for my business, like the scope approach, where we're kind of putting systems in place. So like systems improvement, compliance assistance, outcomes enhancement, preventative risk strategies, and equity, because equity should be kind of tiered through everything that we do. Because when we think about equitable solutions, especially in digital health, a lot of people are using the buzz framework of like social determinants of health. And yes, that it's all of the things that we need to be thinking about. Like, of course, people need housing and education and community, safe neighborhoods, foods, all of those things, like financial security. But when we're looking at that, we have to look in terms of how we can provide it and how we can look at things, not only like, of course, for marginalized groups like race and ethnicity, but other groups as well as people who are differently abled and women, because a lot of times they are feeling unsafe in these environments. So we need to provide these frameworks in order to keep them safe, but also improve those outcomes like the unwanted pregnancies.
Right. I like that. We should talk a little bit about outcomes. I also think it's important for people to realize that some of the data within like an app or within, you know, even social media, some of your health data is not regulated the same way. So the privacy that people have in something they download on their phone, they're probably not as aware of. And when we talk about some of the, you know, the AI revolution, these things talk a lot about how it's the responsibility of technology companies to start building things before the regulation catches up, so we can protect patient data and protect patient choice. I'd love to hear about great outcomes. You know, is that helping? Is it helping build trust? Is it helping rebuild some of the damage that has been done to women's health recently or in long term, you know?
That is such a great question. It's something that we've been talking about quite a bit lately within ME. When we think about patient data, we think about consumer data, there's a few things from a social and from a technology perspective that jump up. One is that a lot of people don't realize that HIPAA-protected data, so if you're required as a health entity to undergo HIPAA-protected data engagement, HIPAA requires that any user data stored in the system is stored for 6 years after the last time the system was used. And also HIPAA requires that if there is a regulatory request or a law enforcement request for your data, that it be supplied. And this is different than the expectation of the private sector, where there's a growing expectation among users that if you ask an entity to delete your data, that entity will delete that data as soon as possible, not hold on to it for 6 years. And so for us, one of the bars we look at is not the HIPAA bar, but the consumer protection bar. We think of it from the perspective of, if I'm a user and I ask somebody at Emmy to remove my data, delete my data, shut down my account, my expectation is that it's going to be deleted that day. And so from a technology perspective, that's the bar that we hold ourselves to. This provides an opportunity for us to think about technology in a very different way over the long term. You know, if we look at companies, there's competitors of our Drip.io. It's an open source period tracker. They're doing a phenomenal job at how they manage their user data. And one of the things that they do differently at Drip that we don't do is at Drip, all of your independent, all your data, your user data is stored on your own personal device. So we store ours in one of the major public clouds. And we safeguard the data, but we don't store it on individual user devices, which is sort of a gold standard right now for some period tracking apps. And we've made a decision not to, because right now we do take excellent care of our users' data, and we're also making predictions and helping users manage their health based on some of the inferences that we're drawing on anonymized data. So the challenge for us is going down the road of, how do we ensure that our users' data is kept segregated, potentially on their own device, and yet still allow us to make the sort of decisions and AI and machine learning driven recommendations around their health and their healthcare management that they'd be able to enjoy if that data is shared? And so this involves our developing new architectures that allow us to have that user data stored in an incredibly private way, potentially even local to their devices, give users control over that data, and yet give these users the benefits of some of these decisions and recommendations that you can make once you've been studying a lot of different people.
Yeah, that's important. Like being able to learn from it while protecting it is a unique issue for healthcare data. Like, how do they help it? Can you share any statistics or any success? Like, how many users do you have? Like, you don't have to say user, you know, like, what does this look like?
Yeah. So for us, we don't share our number counts, right, for a variety of reasons. One of the things I can share, though, is our growth. So we put our app up on the market. We were selling it starting September 8th. And we're very unusual in consumer apps in that we've met or exceeded 10% week over week growth since then. It's a very high bar for consumer app. And so we're exceeding it, which we're really excited about. When we look at our engagement numbers are incredibly high. You know, I can look at them in real time. And we have on average about 80% of our users coming back month after month. We have a significant number of users coming back every single day and engaging with the app every single day. And this is just fascinating to us. It's amazing how long users stay on our app and use our app to manage their health with their birth control.
I like that. That's important because I feel like engagement can show you the effectiveness of your health app. Like if people don't use it, they don't want it.
Right, right. And we don't want to be, you know, like a gym membership. We've all had gym memberships where we pay the gym membership. We don't go to the gym. What we roll one is we want people to pay for the app, but maybe even more important to us is that people are using their app every single day. And so that's where we hold ourselves.
Are there any things that you can share in terms of compliance? Like, does it improve quality of care? Does it improve compliance?
It seems to. So the data that we have suggests that adherence to your birth control pill improves by approximately 80% after a month of using the Emmy app and the Emmy Smart Case. And we're now waiting to derive our end of year reports on this, but we appear to have a significant impact on adherence to pill usage.
Oh, that's great news. Yeah. So tell me what's next. I want to hear from both of you. Like what is the good news on the horizon?
I think that both of us are just really excited for the growth for 2024 of Emmy and looking forward to just helping more women take control of their healthcare, as well as continuing to advocate for all of the things that women need in healthcare, especially with a lot of the different upcoming conversations that I'm sure we'll have in 2024 about the state of women's health. So Emmy wants to be one of the people, the groups in the forefront of advocating for women.
Right. So we're almost out of time. I'd love to hear your advice to, you know, our audience is largely healthcare leaders, but what advice would you give them about improving women's health and like this focus that you've adopted? Like, how do people get there? It's a hard question.
That is a wonderful question. But I think that it starts when we're thinking about implementing any change and any innovation. I think, number one, a lot of times, with especially with digital health and certain organizations, whether or not they're startups or in their more established organizations, we tend to think in silos. So we love to have our engineering teams and our user experience and our product team and then clinicians on the side. And sometimes you'll have your idea and you'll work through all of the methods of design thinking. But number one, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. A lot of engineers kind of think in that design thinking method, and clinicians think through the scientific method. So we have to find ways to create one language and bring that on early. So we can have fascinating ideas and all of these things, but when you bring your clinician team on, they're like, hey, HIPAA, hey, the FBI is literally hiring 78 new officers to look into Medicare fraud right now. Like, these things that they may not be thinking of. So we need to bring the teams together early and work collaboratively to create these solutions. And with that, you also have to think about your users. So we can have wonderful ideas, but we have to see if they're realistic and if the users want to use them. So taking that feedback and getting those variations out there is one of the great steps, because we can think we have a solution for women and it may not be, as we may have seen in some of the recent articles and funding like roundups, even though there are a ton of women-led, women's health founders, because FemTech is definitely picking up. Most of the people who are getting funding are men. So right. There's a disconnect there. So huge. How do we make sure that these things that we're coming out with are actually for women? And not saying that men aren't coming up with great ideas, but how do we make sure that it's the ideas that need to get out there that are being funded and that are being utilized and promoted?
Right. I think that's important, like having an actual women first throughout the project, you know? Do you have any closing thoughts, Erin?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's the end of year. We're all trying to spend our end of year healthcare dollars. And I've been spending a lot of time in various doctor's offices. And one of the things that really strikes me is the care with which practitioners approach their work. And when I look at the what it takes right now, you know, after the last 3 years of COVID, after the levels of burnout that I keep reading about, when I think about what it must take for people to show up day after day and provide warm, empathetic, engaged healthcare, I'm really driven to think about what are the tools that we can put in the hands of patients and physicians and practitioners to allow practitioners to do the things that they went to school to do. You know, people go to medical school, which is an incredible feat. People get their LPNs. People spend so much time developing the skills and empathy to take care of others. And how can we use technology to reduce that burden and allow people to do their jobs rather than add paperwork and burnout, which seems to be the approach that's been taken the last couple of years. And anything we can do to reduce that, we are all about here at Emmy.
I love that. Like, make it so they can work together, like working together for women's health from the different perspectives. Because, you know, we've worked with engineers and physicians, and there is a gap. And it's nice to see that people are working on creating things together and creating things that are aware of the environment that we're in. So I want to thank both of you for coming today and for talking to me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Health Impacts Digital Health Talk. Don't miss another podcast. Subscribe at digitalhealthtalks.com. And to join us at our next face-to-face event, visit healthimpactlive.com.